the buildings and the pavement and the malls. I love the factories, I love the rubber balls. I love the ukuleles and the sound of spinning tape. I love the things that people make. I love the tricycles, I love the synagogues. I love the Lego and I love the Lincoln Logs. I love the fishing lures, I love the plumber's snakes. I love the things that people make. I love the Ginsu knives, I love the garden gnomes. I love the way that people decorate their homes. I love the ovens and the casseroles they make. I love the things that people make.
Hello! Welcome to These Things That People Make. My name is Sarah, and I am the host of These Things That People Make. Welcome to the show. These Things That People Make is a show all about things people make that are not fine art and the politics behind those things that they make. And today is a special show for two reasons, and I'll tell you what they are. One, I am leaving my job at CFRU tomorrow. It's not a secret. People already know. I've given notice. I'm going to keep doing my show. But what that means is that I'm very infrequently going to be in the studio. I'm going to be sending my show in remotely and pretending that I'm in the studio. But this is the last time live in the studio that I'll be here for a while. And the other thing that's really exciting is I have two of the hottest babes from Guelph in the studio with me. And if you listen to the show, you'll know that I never have people in here with me. I pre-record my show. And I'm so excited. So would you guys like to introduce yourselves?
Sure, I can go first. I'm Lori, and I knit and spin and love fiber and just visited alpacas. And I'm going to go to a silk spinning conference weekend in May.
Wow.
I haven't told you about.
You're keeping secrets from me. My name's Erin, and I am right now live on the air spinning some 80% mohair, 20% wool that I think Lori gifted to me as a present. I'm pretty sure. She's looking at it. See if she can remember buying it.
So today we're going to talk about yarn, and we're going to talk about wool, and we're going to talk about Erin and Lori's particular relationships to knitting and all of that stuff. So I'm just wondering if we can start, well, first of all, Erin, can you describe like the contraption you brought in and what exactly you're doing right now?
So I'm spinning fiber. So the fiber that I'm spinning, you can spin almost anything. Like I've got this awesome book, Intertwined, here, and she spins like cattails and cassette tapes and fabric and all sorts of crazy stuff. But I'm currently spinning the fiber of a goat and a sheep. And so it doesn't look like the traditional spinning wheel that you see women using in fairy tales. It's a little travel model. It's a little Ashford Joy travel model. So it has two treadles, not one, so I don't wear out one foot. I don't get some sort of repetitive strain injury. And two, The treadles sort of fold up into the wheel, and the wheel is stands straight up. So it fits like in a backpack, basically, like a very big backpack. But I could buy a backpack and take it around to me. Because part of spinning for me, like I learned to spin in a group. I didn't sit at home and do it. And part of spinning for me is taking it out places. And I don't know if you remember, Lori, when I first got the spinning wheel, I just brought it everywhere with me. I brought it to knitting group all the time, and I was like, yes.
Yes, she brought it when I was volunteering at another organization, and I was alone in the the policy is that you have to have two people to be able to open, so I gave Erin a call, and so she brought her spinning wheel over and tried to teach me how to do it, but she's right-handed and I'm left-handed. And I have osteoarthritis in my knee. And that's when Erin learned what arthritis feels like by putting her hand on my knee and going, ah!
That's gross.
From all the grinding, grating stuff that happens.
Yeah, and I quite often sit on my front porch. Like, our front porch is kind of like a stoop in Manhattan. So I'm trying to bring that culture back where people like, your apartment's tiny and hot. Let's go sit on your front porch.
Yeah.
So I sit on my front porch with my dog and I spin, or I do the dirty parts because somebody gifted me what I call a garbage fleece. So it's not a sheep that was raised to make fiber. It was a sheep that was raised for meat or for the joy of having sheep. And they shaved it because sheep get too hot in the summer. You have to shave them. And they just gave me the fleece. And it's full of poop and spiders and all sorts of gross stuff. And so I'm like weeding through this fleece and on my front porch. And people stop and ask all the time, like, what are you doing? Or, you know, it'd be easier just to buy a sweater. Or how long is it going to take you to spin enough for a sweater? And I'm like, I don't know. I've never knit a sweater. Like, but yeah, it gets people talking. Like, doing it out in public is really important to me. I just realized how that sounds.
Really great. It sounds really great. Lori, can you talk a bit about, like, community and knitting or not community and knitting, or how, like, if you think about those things together or separate?
Sure. Well, I started knitting. I started knitting when I was 8, and it was terrible. Mm-hmm. And the person who was teaching me was really critical and took my knitting needles away. So I didn't knit again until I was a teenager. And my mom had been carrying around this sweater that she started knitting for me when I was 18 months old and never finished.
And wow.
So I was just like, well, what's this? Because I, you know, like drawing and painting and all kinds of stuff. And then got my mom to teach me, like show me how to knit again. And I had a friend who was knitting. And so I knit a sweater.
That was the first thing you knit?
First thing I knit was a sweater. And the second thing I knit was a sweater that I designed.
Wow.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard all this before. I'm just still blown away.
And I brought the sweater. And I don't think I've shown it to you before.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Could you show it to us now?
Sure. So it's kind of a story sweater. And, okay, it's kind of hard to put out in the radio. And, you know, visuals don't really work for radio.
Well, it's dazzle-mazing.
And it's got... my mom had some white yarn. I don't know what it is. It's some kind of wool and something else blend, probably. And I've got various colors of philosopher's wool. Do you want to talk about philosophers?
Yeah, I'm knitting my first ever sweater. I brought an arm with me today, and it's from philosopher's wool. And it's two people. I don't remember their names. And they're in Ontario, and they were raising sheep for fleece, and they were selling their fleece to big fleece buying warehouses, and they would give them a flat price regardless of how nice the fleece was, regardless of how much poop it had in it, regardless of staple length, crimp. These are all things you're looking for in a nice fleece. And they were like, this is kind of BS. Like, we work so hard to have really nice fiber, and then we get the same price, and price was going down and down and down. So they started their own mill, and they charge a variable price, or they will pay a variable price depending on how clean the fleece is and how
what the quality
is. And they really believe that people, you should visit their website, Google Philosopher's Wool. They really believe that people aren't allergic to wool, which I don't totally agree with, but I do agree with them in that most people aren't allergic to wool. They're allergic to the really harsh chemicals that are used to clean all that poop out of the wool when you're using bad fleece.
And the really harsh dyes.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, so I used philosopher's wool because I found out it was an Ontario wool.
Yeah.
And that these sheep we're treated pretty nicely. Mm-hmm. So various purple colors of that. And I've got a green chenille and kind of goldy linen. And one thing that the first knitting book that I got was called Glorious Knitting by Cave Facet, right? Kaffee?
I always say Kaffee, but I'm wrong. I know I'm wrong.
Yeah. K-A-F-F-E Facet. And it's a Dutch name. So I'm never sure if it's Kaff or Kaffee or Kaif. But anyway, and he was a big proponent of just knit with whatever you like. And it doesn't matter if the yarns are the same size or the same content. And so I just went with it and made this story sweater, and it's got houses at the bottom. And then there, at the time, I was really interested in goddess symbols and stuff like that. So it's got a Phoenician goddess symbol, and then they look kind of like tulips, but they're supposed to be women symbols up farther on the yoke. And at the very top of the yoke, there's kind of, that's like, is that Fair Isle?
Sure, the classic kind of snowflake pattern on the yoke.
But it was totally by accident, which is hilarious, because it was just from the decreases to make the neck. And then I also have little houses and women's symbols on the arms of the sweater. And at the time, I was getting to know the agency Women in Crisis, and I just wanted to make a sweater that talked about safe houses for women. So, and that was something else. People would stop me and say, wow, look at that sweater. What's this about? Or did you make it? Or did somebody make it for you? It's like, no, I made it. And it's, you know, because a lot of women experience violence in their lives. And I think that everyone deserves to have safe housing. And so, yeah, the sweater was a real way to start dialogue about something that people really don't like talking about, which is violence against women.
Yeah. Someone is calling us. I'm going to ask you to please call us in 3 minutes when I play a song. Okay. Is this, as somebody who's like been around knitting but isn't a knitter really, is the story sweater, is there a narrative story school of knitting? You know
like,
what I mean?
Like quilts?
Like, is it a thing?
I don't think so. It's just what I did.
I don't think so either, because I knit a story scarf and I've never had anybody say like, oh my goodness, I did that too. And
okay, that's yeah. really neat.
So
I think it makes sense. Like, mm-hmm. it really makes a lot of sense.
But when, because Lori and I knit in public a lot and we meet with other knitters a lot, we help with, Van was the founder of the Rainbow Knitters Group, but now we help organize it once a month at Out on the Shelf. And whenever you meet a knitter and you ask about their knitting, you know, you'll hear just as much about the yarn they chose and why they chose it and what the colors mean to them.
Yeah, it's true.
Just yeah. as much as the pattern or the techniques that they're using. So, yeah, my story scarf is all about each different. It's abstract. It's sections of triangle knitting, and then it makes up a rectangle. So think about that, mathematicians. But each each different section, each different yarn means something different. Like I won one ball of yarn at the first ever Out on the Shelf knit-a-thon, and one section is, you know, that garbage yarn that I, or the garbage fleece that I got, I just call it that. You know, it's I carded, I washed, I dyed, I spun all of that yarn myself. That's the first time I ever did it, and I put little buttons in there, and like one of them is
and it totally doesn't, like, you'd never think that anyone would ever call it garbage, because it's really beautiful.
Yeah, it is. It is gorgeous. And it's the first time I experimented with like putting buttons and spinning on a core, which, you know, I spun, instead of just spinning two fibers together that are the same, I spun a strand of thread in there with it. And then the last one is my favorite, and it's something my partner got me. It's a all black fleece. So black is a really hard color to dye, because you have to put all colors together. It can look really muddy, and one of the colors can show up, like brown can show up or purple can come out. So he bought some fleece from all black animals. So from black mohair, black sheep, and black alpaca. So black goat, black sheep, and black alpacas. And because of breed standards, black animals have been trying to be bred out. It's only in the last couple, I guess 100, I'm just guessing 100
Sounds
years.
Kind of racist to me.
Yeah.
Putting it out there.
Yeah. And it's partly because you would have to bleach the fiber to be able to put other colors into it.
Yeah.
And so, you know, people want bright, colorful clothing. And so black is not conducive to that.
Mm-hmm. But I love black clothing, and I love the metaphor of, you know, black sheep and feeling like I don't fit in anywhere. Mm-hmm. And the fact that he got me this fiber for me to spin and do whatever I want with was huge. Meant so much metaphorically and symbolically to me. So that's my story scarf. But
beautiful.
I haven't seen anybody else use that word other than Lori and I, which...
Van, too.
Oh, okay.
Yes, another friend of ours. He's a writer, and he's making a quilt that is also kind of, an afghan. And if you just look at it, you wouldn't think, like, it's not like mine, which is really figurative. Like, there are pictures of houses and pictures of women. And you would look at it and go, oh, what a beautiful afghan. But each square tells an individual story. And he blogged about each square. And he's also invited friends to make squares for him that have stories and then tell him the stories.
Which I have done all my squares. I've done like 7 squares for him. I just have to write down the stories.
Just do it.
I know.
We're going to go to a song, a Bratmobile song from this box set of vinyl called Metropolitan. And then we'll be back.
Neapolitan Metropolitan.
Simple Machines. I don't even really. It's a beautiful box. I'm going to spend some more time with it. Okay. So when we come back, we're going to talk about breaking the rules, garbage, finishing projects, and the knit-a-thon.
Great.
Are listening to These Things That People Make on CFRU 93.3 FM through the radio waves and also through the internet at www.cfru.ca and the National Campus and Community Radio Exchange and Radio for All. And I am here with Lori and Aaron, and Aaron is spinning live on the air, and we are talking about knitting and knitting projects and yarn and things. And so I want to hear more. I just wrote down some things in the first part of our interview, things you briefly touched upon, so I'm just going to bring it back and be like, what about this? So the first thing I want to talk about is, what are general knitting rules? And talk to me about breaking them.
Okay, because I was going to say knitting rules. I hate knitting
exactly.
rules.
Exactly. Let's talk about it.
But I don't know. I can't. Laura, I think you'd be better at naming them, because I can't even name them. I know I break them all the time, but...
Well, there's that one rule that I talked about that you're supposed to use the same type of yarn. You can use different colors, but you should use the same fiber content because it might shrink differently or hang differently. You're supposed to block things to make them into the right shape, which means getting them wet sticking pins in them on a towel or a board and letting them dry into a specific shape. I've never blocked anything in my entire life.
And I think I'm actually going to not finish a project because it's going to take an immense amount of blocking. So I'm just like, no, I'm not. If I'm going to have to get this wet and pin it, no, I'm not going to do that. And one knitting rule that I break all the time is that you have to finish every project that you start. I'm like, no, I'm not into this. And it took me so long to learn that about books. If I'm not digging the book, I cannot read it. Mm-hmm. So if I'm not into the knitting project, I can put it down and rip it out, even if I spent 20 hours on it, mm-hmm. and start something else. I never do swatch gauges.
Oh, yeah.
What's a swatch gauge?
It's like math. Knitting has a lot of math in it.
Because I actually like swatches.
I know.
And controversy. We have controversy in this studio.
I'm considering getting into them because it gives you a jumping off point to know where you're going. But mm-hmm. I quite often am so excited about the yarn and I just want to
get.
So your gauge is how big the loops are and how wide they are?
Yes. Okay.
So when you make a swatch like that, you knit a certain number of stitches by a certain number of rows, and then you measure it and you count the stitches and you count the rows, and you figure out, okay, if I need to make something, 3 feet by 5 feet, I need this many stitches and this many rows.
Mm.
But then when I met, when I met the folks from Philosopher Wool at Fair November, and I was asking for them for this pattern, which is a crossword, I'm making a sweater that's a crossword. It's really exciting.
It's gorgeous.
And there's the arm. And so they just told me, knit the arms first. So you knit the arms, and you know the arms are going to fit circumference of your arm. Keep on trying it on as you're knitting it. And then from that, you'll have your swatch gauge. You'll be able to measure how many stitches you fit in an inch. And then, so I have put this project aside for a little while, partly because I'm knitting from like 11 different colors, so I couldn't have 11 different balls of wool on the airplane that I was taking. But it was just huge. Like, my knitting was going to be bigger than my luggage. So I was just like, oh, well, let's leave that.
Yeah.
And then I've been waiting because there's some math now. I have to measure and I have to figure out, okay, if I want the sweater to be fit this way around my tummy, how many stitches do I have to cast on?
Mm-hmm.
So, and like, I've worked with folks at the Waldorf School. They do a little bit of knitting. They do knitting the whole time, but they learn more about fiber and where fiber comes from in grade 3. And they do, I know a lot of schools do a lot of math and knitting. Yeah.
Thanks, combos.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other reason that I like doing gauges is that I like making my own patterns. So I get graph paper,
cool.
I draw a picture, and then I figure out how that's going to work for knitting.
Yeah.
But then I also need to find out if it's going to translate from paper to fiber. So I knit it, and then I can count the things.
Whereas I really admire Lori in that she creates her own patterns. It's taken me a long time to have that confidence to jump into that. And more often I'll be knitting a pattern, and it's when I start understanding, I'll find a pattern that I like, I'll start knitting it, and then it's when I start understanding how the pattern works that I start to F with it a little bit, to change things up. And I don't read a pattern and suddenly understand the logistics of it.
I think it really speaks to how people's brains work in different ways.
Yeah.
It makes me think about music. Like, some people, when they learn to play an instrument, they really want it. Like, often people, when they ask me to teach them the ukulele, they're like, well, really teach me how to play. And I'm like, I actually don't know what that means. And I don't know if there's anything I could tell you. But some people are like, teach me some standard chords and then I will have so much fun with it. Mm-hmm. And that really wasn't my experience. I didn't learn any chords until like 2 years into playing. So it's just like people's brains, you know.
Sometimes while I'm knitting, I feel my brain literally shifting. Like,
whoa.
Trying to wrap my
head
around.
That's awesome.
It's like it's shifting and I feel things clicking and moving around, kind of like the stairs at Hogwarts. Like, I see them moving and I literally feel that. And sometimes it's too frustrating. I need to give it a break and walk away. And, you know, I'll have 3 or 4 knitting projects in the basket at a time that I can pick up and go and do.
Yeah. And for me, I was really lucky in that the first knitting book I got was Glorious Knitting by Kay Fassett.
Yeah.
Because his brain does work the way mine does, which
perfect.
Is like, I like these colors. I want to make something with it. And I'm just going to do it. I don't care.
And there's a lot of really awful knitting books out there that are really rigid and prescriptive and don't tell you that each knitter knits things differently. They tell you, go ask an experienced knitter, but they don't tell you that they're going to say something. They're going to contradict the last experienced knitter that you asked. And one person might take the needles out of your hand and you might like that. Like, they don't tell you to do it your own way and to get the help that you need.
Mm-hmm. Which, those two things you just said, metaphors for life. Do it your own way and get the help that you need. I want to have you, we have 3 more minutes of talking left. I want to have you talk about, the first thing I wrote down in preparation for this interview is I wanted to have a conversation about being tough and knitting.
Knitting in bars. You have to be tough to knit in bars. And a friend of mine, Sabina, she's the one that used to knit everywhere in public. She still does. She knits in classes. She knits at work. She knits in bars. She knits wherever she wants. And she had a basic sweater pattern. And that's why the first thing I knit was a sweater, was because I just borrowed her pattern and went, okay, What does K mean? What does P mean? Mm-hmm. And just did it. So, knitting in public is tough because people have lots of stereotypes about who are. And I've been knitting for 20-something years. So 20 years ago, there wasn't the stitch and bitch kind of radical knitting idea, right? Mm-hmm. And so knitting in a bar 20 years ago was really different than now. And people mocked you or would just be like, what is that? Are you sewing? And like, no, I'm not sewing.
Yeah.
I think there's 2 things there for me. One is that knitting doesn't have to be pretty. It can be tough.
Yeah.
Like the, you know, there's an awesome edible underwear. With licorice, the flexible, the spaghetti licorice.
Uh-huh.
That's on knitty.com. Like, you can knit whatever you want. You can, somebody I know knit a dildo harness. Like,
cool.
Knitting can be tough. It can be radical. But then in that, with the sort of bust craftivism revolution, it's not enough for me just to be like, oh, I'm overthrowing the state. I'm knitting. Like, there's so much more to it for me. That's not where my activism ends. It's about local materials. It's about doing it in public. It's about creating a community where we're able to discuss these things. And being able to be artistic and being able to support people in my life. So sometimes I get frustrated with the sort of very topical craftivism sort of politic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I've had really difficult, painful conversations with people over knitting because you don't have to look people in the eye. It's like how you can have hard conversations in cars driving somewhere or in the kitchen doing dishes.
Yeah.
You don't have eye contact, and but you can look up from time to time when you want to. And it's really great.
And I think we have to end now, even though Erin has something really exciting to say. I want to end on that note because I think it's really touching. And I want to say thank you so much for you both to come in.
Well, thank you.
And I'm excited to see all the things that you continue to make with wool. It's really beautiful.
Thanks.
Yeah.